Hey everybody, Stu Smith here with Jeff Nichols. We're doing another Tactical Fitness Report, and this is probably one of my favorite ones we've ever done, because today we are going to play Secretary of Defense, right? If we were Secretary of Defense, how would we change things to make things better? Because if we're going to bitch about something, the one thing I want to do is provide a solution, even though that solution may be so far-fetched and cost so much money. It's my solution, right? Right. It's my answer to make things a little bit better, whether it is the recruiting process or whatever. So we get a lot of feedback from people in various branches of service in the recruiting pipeline, especially in the special forces pipelines. And they're all over the place. I mean, we get, emails and DMs and IMs from, recruits that are solid, squared away. We get some that come in there way too early, and how can I fix this thing that I started and get to where I want to be within a certain amount of time, when they're delayed entry program. And, we see a lot of inconsistencies, throughout all the recruiting districts. And I've made a joke for years that, if I go to Texas and I go to McDonald's and grab a French fries from McDonald's, I guarantee it's going to taste the same as if I eat a French fries in Maryland. Now, I don't eat McDonald's French fries, but
if you did,
if I did, I guarantee you they would taste the same. They're pretty consistent. That is a very consistent franchise, no matter where you go in the United States. The Navy, the Army, the recruiting process with all the different recruiting districts and different people who give different tests, it's not that consistent. They try to be very consistent, but unfortunately there's some inconsistencies going on. And I'm not going to get into the specifics of the things we hear, but, it's with goggles, without goggles, it's no double arm pulls. It's no dolphin kicks.
It's yard pulls, meter pulls.
Meters.
Knowing it's.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's some of those things. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that are all over the place. And unfortunately, where this comes down to is you, the recruit. You have to be a better recruit. And what that means is you need to do your research and figure out all the intricacies and details of the profession that you are seeking. Right. And as well as the journey to get there throughout the recruiting and delayed entry program process. So Jeff and I are going to play SecDef and try to, make this a little bit better. But before we do that, we're going to have a laundry list of ways that you can be a better recruit and understand the timeline that it takes to actually be a really good recruit.
Yep. Yeah. And again, because it's with respect also to the mentors, the recruiters, the process of the Department of the Navy, Army, whatever it is, there are inconsistencies. And then Stu is right, though. Like, I think a lot of those inconsistencies exist because of the lack of preparation by the recruit in primary. Like, that's where it starts. Like, it's very easy for us to throw mud. And again, we do get a lot of emails and DMs and inquiries, but it's really one-sided. We're getting it from the recruit side.
Yeah.
And since Stu and I have been through, we know some of the guys, we know the process, certainly. We know that there is a fairly robust percentage of guys that are really just, they're playing mom versus pop. Like, they're playing Stu and I versus, and how did you show up when you talk to the mentor and all these sort of folks pertaining to how Stu and I recommend? Like, hey, we say, don't go see a recruiter until, when you're seeing a mentor deal with, like, we're giving you guys some of the information now. We're trying to give them as much slack as possible, because we know from our experience of the people that engage with us, show up to us completely unprepared. And if they're showing up to us completely unprepared at times, we certainly know that they're showing up completely unprepared in stages of this too. So we're not putting it all on the recruiter.
Yeah, showing up to us unprepared, that's fine. I can take an unprepared recruit and prepare them, as long as they're not already in the pipeline where their timeline is shortened to whatever their ship date is or their, you know, length of time they can be in the delayed entry program. There may not be enough time for it. In fact, I'm a very visual person. And in fact, I made a timeline. I haven't really shared this at all with anybody. So I'll try to just share my screen. And maybe we can kind of go here along with the timeline. And
yeah, let's do that.
Kind of riff off this a little bit. So let me just share this with you. Made this the other night in PowerPoint. But anyway, you read it from the top to bottom. This is kind of a recruit preparation timeline. You know, 1 to 17, 18 months kind of depends on you. And if you notice, you know, this timeline may lengthen depending on your ability or inability to reach certain scores. It may also shorten if you're already in the optimal zone. You know, I've seen guys that are, you know, in the delayed entry program for a month and then they go straight to boot camp. You know, that's because they're ready, right? Yeah. You know, so all this kind of depends on your current scores, your athletic history, and as well as your age. If you're young, you can lengthen your timeline. If you're getting older, you probably need to shorten your timeline. So there's all these little intricacies that comes down to our favorite answer, it depends.
Yeah.
I'm just going to kind of start off here with this 1 to 17 months. It's just kind of over the years I've seen people how long it takes the average unprepared person to thoroughly prepare. And it, you know, once again, it depends on a variety of things. But if you're pretty unprepared, haven't done anything in a while, maybe partied through college and, you know, you haven't been an athlete in 4 or 5 years, this journey can take a little longer. However, you spend some time working out in college, maybe a D1 athlete, you know, you can seriously shorten this timeline of a year and a half to less than 6 months.
Right.
Absolutely. So there's some key markers here. If you notice, there's these little red diamonds along the way. Optimal PST scores. I have seen if you come in with below average or failing PST scores, it can take up to 5 to 6 months to get optimal PST scores.
Yeah.
For most people. Right, because let's say you got to learn how to run, you got to learn how to swim, you know, you get a shin splints because you've never run before. You know, all of those things lengthen your timeline when you get started.
Right.
Another one is, you know, exit score PSTs. You should already be able to hit your prep, BUDS prep exit scores long before you go to boot camp. You know, all it is 1,000-meter swim. If you look at the bottom, 1,000-meter swim in 18 minutes. Now, these are my scores, by the way. These aren't the Navy scores. When I say optimal or better, the or betters are mine. I think optimal scores are a little less than this. But these are typical. My guys, whenever they're leaving, they tend to get in these numbers. So the 8:20 swim, the 9-minute run, 80 to 100 push-up sit-ups, 20 pull-ups.
Yeah, mine are extremely similar.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not coincidental.
No. It's a good elevated score that ensures success even after the deconditioning phase that is known as boot camp.
Yep.
Because unfortunately, you're going to take a PST right after boot camp. And if you're flirting with the minimum standards before boot camp, imagine 8 weeks of not training and you're going to decondition and you now have scores that you have to hit that you were barely hitting in the first place, you're going to be out of the program on day one of prep.
Yep. Yeah. No worries. Yeah. Cause that's the idea is, well, that's the whole point of all this is because why we're coming to this conclusion primarily is this is if you're looking at the population of people, they get like bottlenecked at stages, they get bottlenecked with a recruiter, they get bottlenecked with a mentor, they get bottlenecked at Great Lakes. But that bottleneck happens because of ultimately the proper training ahead of time was not established. The proper physiological training, like state of readiness, we'll call it for me, is like, we know that there's going to be deconditioning phases. That's the nature of boot camp. No, you know, there's going to be longer wait times in a lot of people at boot camp, Great Lakes prep. Well, you can't change that. Mm-hmm. So we have to give the mentors, we have to give the folks at Great Lakes and the BUDS prep, the SEAL prep, the best student, the best candidate possible, because they don't have time with respect to them. They're not given the opportunity of this timeline where they can really, you know, train that large of a population.
Yeah.
They're doing, and I hate to say this in the sense of like, they're doing the best they can at that point. Like, and that's why I'm saying, like, the folks at Great Lake, the guys that are managing that system, it's like, they're dealing with hundreds of candidates, but they're also doing it on the property where they're dealing with thousands of recruits, and they're sharing space and time and food. And then not to mention, you have different phases of people that are coming and going, right? Because boot camp is graduating more regularly than they're shipping to San Diego and Coronado. Yep. So there is this crazy bottleneck that happens. And for a candidate to think they're like, oh, I'm just going to get to that point and I don't have one-on-one instruction from these guys that are, it's not reasonable. And it's actually not, in my opinion, it's not even fair to put that on them. It's just not. If Stu and I were running Great Lakes, we'd still have the same problems as they do.
Oh, absolutely.
This isn't like bypass what's going on. We're taking a look at what's currently going on and how do we better refine the current process, because the skeleton of the process is working pretty, I mean, it can work. I think that we think there's some refinement within it that can be done. And that's what this is.
And mainly the refinement is with the recruit. And here's the big problem is, if you go over here on the far left of this picture and you're in the 1 month mark, right? You're going through, you just met a recruiter and the recruiter goes, well, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do I qualify for? Well, if you ever tell a recruiter that, stand by, because you know, you're going to be at the needs of the Navy, what they need to fill the most. That's just a quota thing that they have to do. But, you know, they also, you know, want to recruit more nukes and they want to recruit more SEALs. That's just, every recruiter will do that. So they may, if you're one of those guys that say, wow, Navy SEAL, I never thought of that. At this moment, you're just stepping into a pipeline and a timeline that is not going to prepare you right. Every now and then you get someone who's just, you know, maybe played three sports in high school and great athlete, and he comes in there and still needs to work, right? Just because you're a great athlete. But if you don't do anything and then you go in there and someone puts in the idea that, yeah, come join the Navy, you can be a SEAL. I can't tell you how many people I've seen who've come found me in the middle of delayed entry program to learn how to swim.
Yeah.
And some of their first times ever getting across the pool was with me. And they're,
you guys gotta understand,
they're already too short in their timeline. If they come with me a year before this whole process has started, be a different animal. You know, I could prepare them and teach them how to swim, and then they go and do that. That's why we always say, don't even talk to a recruiter until you can crush a PST.
Yeah.
That sets you right on this timeline and can shorten your timeline by half a year easily.
Yeah, that onus has to be on the crew. And this, my personal belief is this, is that because we're talking purely in the interest of navigating this the best, in the interest of navigating this the best way, they need to learn to do all of this stuff before they get into the pipeline. That's not to say the mentors and they can't help people learn how to swim.
Oh yeah.
But based on the numbers, it's so unlikely that they'll be able to give you that attention. So if you know that with respect to both sides, the candidate and the department side, the Navy side or Army, whatever it is, If you fail to meet the standards at any point, you cannot blame the system necessarily. Like if you've been outright lied to or whatever, that's not necessarily what we're talking about. Because ultimately, if you prepare yourself the way that Stu and I have been recommending all these years, you won't encounter these big issues.
Yeah.
You will get the attention appropriately within these time lanes with the mentors, with the prep guys, with, because then you're like, oh my God, this guy knows what's going on. They can just wind you up and send you on your way. Like within that program, like they're not trying to explain to you. They're not having to have remediation with you on your own time. It's like when you're in the system, you're in the system then. You're not trying to get in.
Yeah, they're not trying to teach you to swim. They're not trying, they don't have to teach you to tread
it's
water.
It's not their job. I just really, it's because of the popularity of special programs now, as much as that we'd like to say, well, the Navy can get us ready, out of sheer timeline and numbers set forth at this current time, it's super unfeasible.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple, you're right. There's a couple hundred people in Bud's prep.
Yeah.
And, you know, to think that you're going to get any amount of individualized attention, about the only time you're going to get individualized attention is if you're screwing up.
Yeah. Yeah. Failing miserably.
And that's not a fun way to get individualized attention at all, no matter where you are. So anyway, you get in this, now you're ready for DEP. You crush the PST, and then there's some other things that you need to work on. You know, Jeff and I always talk about getting to and through the training, and you know, you got yourself to the training by crushing the PST. You're not going to get through the training by continuing to focus on the PST. You have to focus on other elements of fitness, and this is where the tactical athlete building comes in. And you may have some of these great elements of strength and power, you know, from a previous athletic history. You may be more of the endurance and muscle stamina guy from from an athletic history, and all those are going to come into play into your timeline on the second half of preparing to get through. But what you have to start doing now is start preparing for the actual events in your future that occur. You have 4-mile timed runs. You have 2-mile ocean swims with big scuba fins on that you have to prepare your legs and ankles for.
Yep.
You're running in sand. You're going to have some rucking in sand as well, and other load-bearing exercises, you know, that – you know, you can replicate a lot of those in the weight room, preparing for some of the strength elements that are required to just have a strong spine and legs and posterior chain, because you're going to be lifting boats off the ground and logs off the ground and putting them onto your head and then running with them, you know, under constant load. And those things crush you.
And that's why the timeline we've set, right? Because to develop, like if you're looking at the strength requirements, longer runs, and because we're not just establishing a timeline arbitrarily, to actually, again, break the muscle down appropriately and the bone tissue, let, you know, heal, evolve, adapt, all those sort of things to get to manage the tolerance needed to handle, it takes time to develop that. And that's why it's like, well, can I do this in 6 months? Like, well, there might be an outlier who's had all these pre-sport and, you know, exposures, but to get the bone density, to get the muscular endurance, to get the aerobic endurance sustained without, like, and being able to make some overtraining mistakes and throttle back and healing from that. That's why this timeline exists. It allows for us as coaches and for you as candidates to realize, oh, okay, I'm going to overtrain a bit. I'm gonna have to throttle back and then realize, okay, follow the plan. You know, it allows for some mistakes too.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, you can see that top line there with the PST scores horizontal. It goes into the Navy SEAL TAP test events. And I put a plus there just because there's some other things that you can do to simulate some of the issues that you will be seeing, especially in those first 5 weeks of Buds when you're dealing with logs and boats and Hell Week and all of those things. But the good news is after Hell Week, you know, you're not going to be touching logs and boats anymore unless you really screw up.
Yeah.
I think I've seen some second phase guys under a log every now and then. But
yeah, we had the boats once in second phase.
It's very, very rare.
Yeah.
You know, those are things that you have to also prepare for. But the good news is it's front loaded in the system.
Yeah.
After that, it really comes down to 4-mile timed runs, 2-mile ocean swims, and then starting to become tactically proficient in the phases that you are learning new skills.
Right.
That's, you know, there's, and to be fit and not be failing at these runs or stressing out so much about it, it makes learning that much easier for you.
Yep.
You have to learn on such a steep learning curve, whether that is diving or navigation or shooting or whatever. you know, those things are learned on a very steep learning curve, and you got to pick those things up quickly. And if you can't, yep. because you're burned out, you're tired, you're just not grasping on to some of these things, that's where your aerobic and anaerobic conditioning really come into play yep. for your ability to just calm down and actually retain all this new information that you're getting.
Yeah, because we're trying to develop the aerobic system. We're trying to acquire skill, right? Learn the PST requirements. We're trying to acquire that skill and everything. And then it's like a half and half. It's develop the system aerobically, anaerobically, and develop skill. And that's instead of doing all at once, a yes. timeline allows you to be progressive about it. It's like, okay, you know, because if it was simple as training them all at once, you know, the timeline would be condensed, all that good stuff, but it doesn't. And that's also why the timeline is like, because if you kind of look at what you're seeing here and everything that we've said is like, listen, whatever your weaknesses are, we're going to train those first, because that's developing that. Like, we got to develop yeah. that, because if we don't, it will be a limiting factor at some point later on. And so that's also why timeline, that's why you're seeing these like, okay, well, why would I get optimal PST scores before? Okay, because that is right there. That's the gate. That's the yep. gate. And once you get through that gate, now we can prep, right? We can prep the system a lot easier.
Yeah, so, and you can maintain those PST scores even absolutely. Though you're getting stronger.
Yeah, you will see that. If you're always just training for an event, right, then you're not actually developing yourself holistically.
Yeah.
So, and that's why timeline allows for that, because you really, in preparation for this stuff, what our goal is to take you in as healthy as possible at that 17 month mark. Not like I've willed myself down just to meet the standard. It's taken me 18 months just to meet the standard, rather than, you know, work on something for a couple months, develop that, you know, shift the stimulus, work on something else. And it's like a stair step. After 18 months of progress, right? Maintenance, progress, maintenance, progress, maintenance, all of a sudden you've made a huge leap in your anaerobic and your aerobic strength and endurance. And now you're looking back on, wait a minute, I haven't even necessarily been focused on the PST, but because I've really developed myself as an athlete, your PST numbers go way up.
Yeah.
And now you have the tolerance to manage those selection courses.
And you can do that PST on a bad day, on any day. You don't need to take absolutely. A day off and do a taper before a PST. You can do a leg day the day of a PST and then go work out doing the PST 3 hours later. I mean, it should not affect your PST scores. That's the level of tactical athleticism we're trying to build, and it does take a long time to do that.
We want the PST to become a sub-maximal event.
Yeah.
So think about that. You're like, well, wait a minute. Like, if I'm doing maximum numbers, how is it a sub-maximal event? Because you're bracketed into a timeline. You only have 2 minutes to do push-ups. So that the reason why that works is because in, let's say you do well, you do 135, 140 pushups, which is quite good. Well, in the course of a day of buds, you're going to far exceed 140 pushups. So that's what I mean. Is like, now, should the PST make you very tired for that duration and maybe an hour or so afterwards? Yes. But it's still a submaximal event relative to your ability to accumulate that work.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is if all we ever do is PST, 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 max, 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 that becomes your max, not the ability to accumulate after a PST.
Right.
And so that's what we're trying to get you to focus on. That's what we're saying. Recruit, get ready before you go see a recruiter, because you're going to make that person's job so much easier. And then you're going to make the mentor's job easier. And then you're going to make the Department of the Navy's job really easy to pick you in the lottery.
Oh, absolutely. That's a really good point. The better recruit you are, you're making everybody's job easier in here, you know, and I have, you know, the opportunity to speak with the recruiters and, you know, some of the mentors in our region. And, you know, I remember bringing it up once. I was like, man, I can't imagine the type of people you see on day one of their first PST. And he said, yeah, I mean, I've had people that have never swum before. not make it across the pool. Made sure the lifeguard was watching, some guys. Oh, yeah. It wasn't going to finish. We just let them keep swimming. And, I was just like, wow. So it's, you get all types. Then you get people in there that come in there and swim a 6-minute 500, just crush it, which is an insane time. So they're all over the place, and they have a tough enough job as it is, and the last thing I want to do is come across as telling them they could do their job better. There are some institutional things that, could make everybody's life easier if they're brought up, but it really comes down to the recruit being a better recruit. And this, in my mind, this is how you become a better recruit long before you even talk to someone in the Navy about recruiting or mentorship.
Step one, 100%.
And
that's the whole idea too, is because this is like, it's about to better get a better recruit, but also because this information is readily available of like the SEALCIRC.com advertises these processes, like, hey, go to your recruiter, you'll be assigned a mentor in your region, then you're gonna go, but it's all advertised. So for someone to show up, just as an example, my final example, someone shows up with an inability to swim, okay, and then we talk to a recruiter, whatever it is, like, I think what we're trying to do is clean up, and that's what we're gonna get to. We're gonna say, okay, there has been some miscommunications objectively from an institutional standpoint. So it's like, we kind of give you this overview here, right? And we said, hey, there's some problems within it. Now we're going to try to give you some objective ways step. Like, okay, so as a recruiter, what are some of the common objective institutional mishappenings that happen? But again, that's still linked to the recruit. Okay. So we are going to, there are some institutional things based on the emails that we get. Okay. But ultimately it still falls on the recruiter because Stu and I are readily available, accessible. SEALCIRC.com is readily accessible to, there's no one in the pipeline that's going to go, you know what, just show up completely unprepared and we'll get you ready. Like, that is kind of where Stu and I come in. But you got to understand, once you sign your name on that, and you go down into the debt program, you're in that pipeline, it's like, you are really under a limited timeline and you're under a limited opportunity because of the things that we're going to go over.
Yeah. Oops. Lost my thing here. I made a big list here on some of the things that I see. And the biggest thing is, you're going to have different, what's a good way to say this? When you take a PST, a lot of times the mentor will test you just to see how you handle change, right? And this is something I've done for years. When I was, active and, doing it with midshipmen, and I would just make a little small change to it, whether it was, okay, you can't do this PST with goggles. You got to do it no goggles, no mask. That's a curveball. You can't do breaststroke pullouts, or you have to face me the entire time you swim. So that means you got to switch sides. You got a weak side, strong side every 25 yards. We're going to do it in a 50 meter pool instead of a 25 meter pool. And know the difference between yards and meters, right? If you're doing it in a meter pool, you only have to swim 450 meters to equal 500 yards.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So there's some inconsistencies there and just that little things like that can be better. And unfortunately with different recruiting districts, I see, when I post something, people will say, oh, we can't do that in our recruiting district. And then they'll say something over here, oh, we can do it in ours. So the things happen like that, but you have to just realize that it doesn't matter where you're swimming. It could be a pond, right? You need to pass 500-yard swim regardless of where that is.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't matter where you're running. It might be a treadmill. It might be a track. It might be a trail. It might be a road with a hill on it. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You still need to pass that mile and a half. Now, if I were SecDef, here's what I would do. I would spend money, which SOCOM has a lot of money. It doesn't even have to be SOCOM. This can be big picture sec dev.
This could be Department of Defense.
Department of Defense, DOD. Where you would build a facility that has everything you need to give active duty and recruits recruiting tests. So whether that is the Army fitness test, the Army combat fitness test that's coming out, the Marine Corps fitness test, the Marine Corps combat fitness test that's already here. The SEAL TAP test, the SEAL PST, the Air Force PASS test, and all of those things. So you would need a pool, you need a track, you need a weight room, you would need pull-up bars, around the track. You know, all of those things right there would just make everything logistically easy for the entire Department of Defense.
Yep.
I
don't think that you're right. That's not too much to ask. And this is why, as I think, because ultimately, what are we trying to do? We're trying to improve the status of the candidate, improve the candidate within the pipeline. And that's like one of the biggest glaring things we see is the inconsistencies in the testing, right? And that right there probably grays the hair of the mentors as much as it does us, right? Or the Department of the Navy or whatever the recruiting office. Because the thing is, like, just an example, this is a common reoccurring thing with respect to the system, is that, like, I had candidates come in this last week and they were tested in the summer. They were tested on an outdoor track, okay, of yards, unbeknownst to the mentor, didn't know the length of it until after the distance was made. And then in the winter, they were doing it on an indoor track that was only 130 meters, but he didn't realize the length of it. And then the pool, same thing, the same mentor, outdoor yard pool or outdoor meter pool, indoor yard pool. And he didn't know why the times were so bad. There was 30 people that took the test, 29 of them failed it. My candidate was the only one that passed, who pointed it out to the mentor that they just did a test in a yard pool. And he didn't know. So that right there is a real problem, okay? And it shouldn't be on the candidate. Again, not to throw mud, but it's like, having a standardized location, are we saying that you should have 50 of them, one in each state? No, we are not. But again, this is kind of, we're going to go through this step-by-step process, but there, I always think of each one of these steps, the recruiter, the mentor, Great Lakes, whatever it is, they're gatekeepers. But at some point, there has got to be some official gatekeepers that talk and communicate on an official capacity, because this can be eliminated. Even if we're not going to build a building, right? That's one of the chief complaints that I have, is inconsistencies from testing location to testing location to test. Because this test that was done was an indoor 130 meter track during the middle of the afternoon with 30 candidates. It was a figure eight. And on that figure eight, there were still civilians walking. It was in a public YMCA where there's people walking, kids playing around. They're literally dodging little kids and the elderly during their test. That right there, to me, is monumentally disrespectful to the process. And the fact that it's even allowed just makes me want to pull my hair out. Because here's the thing, and this is kind of where I'll get on my soapbox and I'll get back on track, is anyone that says that a candidate that is willing to put their life, not just physically, but literally on the line in protection and care of this great country, they deserve better than what they're getting in terms of the informality of this testing protocol, because that's their life. You have anyone in the leadership protocol that's going to say, well, this is as good as it's going to be, or it's better than it was, is still horseshit, right? It absolutely is, because these people, just like Stu at the academy, they're going to get that opportunity, right? No one's going to fudge that test. Fortunately, there were so few people monitoring my selection, because there's only four of us at boot camp. It was easy to see who was passing, failing, but we deserved it. We deserved that opportunity to get an objectively measured test, and it's not happening at times. But that's also, again, in part because the recruits are saturating the mentors with garbage. They're bringing garbage to the table, not the mentors, the recruits. Yeah. So, kind of like, going back a little bit, like Stu and I kind of have our own little steps of like, okay, what should step one might look like in terms of what's the first gate, And like for me, the first gate is we've talked about the recruit has got to put their best foot forward, educate themselves, inform themselves on the process. Okay. But then that piggybacks up with, has the Department of the Navy advertised that process? And the answer is yes. The Department of the Navy has advertised that first process. So coming into that process, the responsibility falls on the recruit. And the only change I would make as a CNO or department or a SecDef is I wouldn't accept any recruits younger than 20. That's kind of my first spot.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
And that's not to say, well, okay, but Jeff, there are 18-year-olds. Okay, I understand that. There are outliers. I had two 17-year-old guys in my buds class. They were 17, turned 18 during. But the point is we don't build plans and programs off of outliers. Plans and programs are built off the 80% in the middle. And because here's the deal, a 17, 18-year-old that's going to complete buds is going to very easily do it at 20. We're not eliminating that person, that 18-year-old that wants to be a SEAL and willing to go through buds at 18. He's still going to do it at 20, and he's still going to successfully navigate buds at 20.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to play devil's advocate with you just once.
Okay.
I agree with you. There are some inconsistencies out there and poor facilities that are completely inconsistent that there's really no excuse for. But I will say this, you know, when you're dealt the amount of unprepared people that come into the pipeline that are allowed in the pipeline by the recruiter,
you bet.
Right. Unfortunately, you almost have to play this little game of what can I do to snap them in a way that they just don't want any part of this. And it's a horrible game. But it happens. You know, for instance, are you going to do a push-ups on your hand? You're going to do push-ups flat. You're going to push-ups, you know, chest on the ground. You know, those are three standards right there that are all over the place. Mm-hmm. But it makes a big difference, right? And I have seen people, you know, who would train forever like this. And then when you tell them to do this or chest on the deck, they get completely flustered. And I've had people get up and walk out of the test.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure, you know, was it because they're just so fed up? They're tired of the inconsistencies. I don't know. Or can they not handle change to a level that you need to be flexible when things don't work out right and have a contingency plan for those things? You know, that's the type of person we're also trying to build here. But, you know, I'd like to think that is what the people who are giving these tests are also trying to do in the background.
Right.
But I don't think that is the case.
Yeah. And I think that there, and I totally agree with Stu, there is a place for that.
Yes.
There absolutely is a place for throwing curveballs at candidates. And I think that, you know, we can advertise those sort of things, but I think that when a person is taking a baseline exam, whether it's scholastically or it's physical,
yes,
there's got to be clear objective measures broadcasted to the candidates.
Yes.
And we see that not happening. And not from the Navy standpoint, it's the onus then, because you see there's like this, you realize that the first step is doing research, right? Either you're going to go talk to someone in person or you're going to go online, okay? If you don't go online, right, you're missing information. If you go to a recruiter, you may or may not get consistent initial information. And that's kind of what Stu talking about. It's like, they might plant the seed of, hey, you got to ASVAB score high enough, you can go special forces, you can do this, right? But I think that what we're doing is we're missing the baton handoff. That's what's getting, it's getting dropped, it's getting fumbled, okay? And so then step two is, you know, for me is obviously, okay, you know the standard, you've done your research. Step two is that you're going to go see a recruiter after you've maximally prepared yourself to the best of your ability, okay? And which that's what does that mean, right? You have to have learned how to swim before you show up to the Navy recruiter, right? At least, like, I understand the combat side stroke or the stroke that's necessary to get into this pipeline, right? I understand that I have the minimum score on push-ups is X. The minimum standard on pull-ups is Y. Like, I know I've been running, and I've at least gotten in there. So that way, the recruiter at least can be the first gatekeeper, right? And that's where we're at. The recruiter... big one is, and I'm not going to dig into this one much. Don't lie. Yeah. At the very least, again, we have offered truth to people willing to serve this country. No more fucking lying. None. No more.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, be very, very clear. There's very few recruiters that are probably doing this. So if you're a recruiter, it's likely that you're very ethical. And I don't, this is not intended towards you, right? It's not. But all we're asking of the recruiter is have a clear understanding of the steps laid out by Naval Special Warfare or Department of the Army, whatever it may be. That's all we're saying, because they are the gatekeeper. Every recruiter should be able to, not off memory, if you have a candidate that comes in and says, I want to be a SEAL, SWCC, EOD, diver, whatever it may be, there's got to be a resource, because there is. It's called SEALSWCC.com, right? Or whatever information they're getting from Millington, Tennessee, which is the official recruiting station. They've got to have that information, right? And we're finding that people are not even giving that information. For example, one of the things is like, oh, no, once you get into boot camp, you can switch your rate over and go to BUDS. That's not how it works.
That is still happening.
Yes.
That is still happening.
I'm breaking that up.
That is not one of those things that happened 10, 15 years ago. Because that's the way it used to be. It used to be, yeah, you can try out when you showed up at boot camp. But
not anymore.
That right there is one of those inconsistencies that can really screw you. There are people at boot camp right now that were sold that.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that by doing that, what you do is you screw over the mentors, right? Because then you go from recruiter, that step process, the first gatekeeper, they go, can you that gatekeeper is doing this. Can you even pass the basic Navy PST? That is the first handoff of the baton, right? Yeah. You prepped yourself for NSW. Okay. So you should have over-prepared for the basic Navy PST.
Easily.
Right? You go see a recruiter, you go, hey, I'm ready to take this basic Navy PST because I'm ready. I really want to try to get into the SEAL community. So that their measurement of success then is at their pay grade, for lack of a better term, right? Unless, like, again, a good friend of mine that just got his team leader position finished, he's going to be a recruiter in Nashville.
Oh,
like,
nice.
Former team leader, he's been his last 16 months in the Navy. And, like, wow, whoever shows up at that recruit depot and wants to be a SEAL, you just got the Willy Wonka golden ticket.
That's,
you know what,
awesome.
I mean?
Yeah.
And so my point, so again, that's where we're at for me is, okay, talk to a recruiter. When we talk to a recruiter, we get the truth. We get an objective plan laid out of what the Navy is expecting. You do the Navy PST. Once they're able to pass a Navy PST or a minimum standard that's agreed upon between the Department of the Navy, the mentors and whatnot, it's like, hey, you still need to be a little bit more. I don't know. Let them decide. Like, let the Navy decide what's best for them, not Stu and I. But we're saying, if you can't pass the Navy PST as a recruit, you shouldn't even be given the opportunity to waste the time of a mentor. That's my thought. So
I like that.
With respect to the mentors being oversaturated with unqualified people, they're, in my opinion, the first ones to go, all right, dude, let's put the screws to these guys so we can kind of wash them out and I'll deal. But in doing so, I think that it creates just some inconsistency, potentially, right? That's the fears. That's what we're talking about this whole thing. It's not like good versus evil, wrong versus right for mentors, no, or anything like that. It's like, no. Recruit, you owe it to the gatekeepers of the mentors because of the uniform they wear and the job that they possessed at one point, right? Yep. And that's hopefully saying the mentors are either SEAL, SWCC, EOD, and whatnot. And that's kind of my next step. But Stu, what do you have on these things?
Yeah, you know, on that one, I would say, once again, if you're a good recruit, you will know the process and you will see something that comes up that doesn't sound right. Either that recruiter is lying to you or that recruiter does not know the process that well and may be familiar with the old process and not with the new process. So you, as a recruit, have to figure that out. Right. And maybe bounce it off another recruiter or, you know, ask somebody, you know, on the SEALSWCC forum, right? You know, something like that. Yeah. You can ask us, but, you know, like I said, we're not in the Navy. Might be able to give you the right direction. You know, they change things so often that I have to do a lot of research just to keep up with what's going on, whether they're changing pull-up scores or they're changing the process a little bit. But I will say this. You know, when people tell me it's better than it was, it is better than it was, but it still has some fine tuning it can do. And my biggest thing is, if you're not within the community giving a test to people who are trying to get in that community, you shouldn't be giving PSTs to that person.
Yes, agreed.
You've never passed this test before, or you can't pass it now, that is one of those things that, you know, that's not a very good gatekeeper, right?
Yep,
to get into it.
And
I guess the biggest thing for me is the, you know, when you're going through that process and you hit those little roadblocks, you should be able to, as a recruit, realize that this is not right. And figure that out for yourself. You know,
yes.
It really comes down to your initiative and you not, I don't say don't believe everything that you hear, but you know, everything that you hear should sound familiar. And if anything doesn't sound familiar, that's when you know, trust but verify. There's a
yes.
classic.
Yeah.
Trust but verify.
Yep. So. Exactly. And see, that should be something we should be able to hold faith in. In this, at this point, once you go to see a mentor, you should be able to feel that. Like, that should be it, right? You should be able to trust it, right? But you still gotta, right? You are in the process, so you have to be assessing it for you. Yeah.
Yeah, and one more thing on this one is the here's the problem. When you get inundated with hundreds of recruits, and let's say half of those at least are unqualified recruits that are now in the pipeline, you now have to get people to help out the mentors.
Yeah.
Because it's gotten so big. And you can't get people that are helping out the mentors that are within the community. I wish you could, but then you're going to get regular fleet people coming in and getting trained up, you know, a couple weeks training or whatever. They learn how to give the PST. And they're just, like I said, regular fleet people that are given the PST now, versus someone who is actually from the community, of the community, and has taken this test before personally, that is probably where things are falling apart. And it's, once again, it's because of the poor recruit.
Yes. Ultimately, it falls on that because I'm going to make this assumption before I make this next statement about my step three of the recruiters is that if you bring the best possible recruits or they're prepped or they've, you know, been vetted and verified by these processes, specifically the recruiters, to the best of what we're just setting as a standard, i.e. be objective, clearly lay out the rules, don't lie, right? Be able to pass a minimum Navy PST. What is going to end up happening is, like any other environment, like, you know, and Stu has a big group of guys, or I'm training a big group of guys, it's really enjoyable as a teacher and a mentor when you're training that population is just chugging along together. Like, it creates a much better training pipeline. And that is buds and SF all of us whole. When you get through Hell Week, right? When selection
so much fun.
Has happened and now you're training. That's what they call it, selection and training. Selection and training. Right? Part of this has got to follow that same, in my opinion, the selection and training. Right? The selection process is up into the point where the mentor has tested. Right? The mentor gets them from the recruiter. There might be a little bit of training ahead to get them a little bit up to speed, right? A little bit of, hey, here's the expectations. That's the selection. Now we train. But here's kind of where my questions fall is like, okay, you know, trying to bring a solution to a problem. Like, I think that in standardizing not just the facility and standardizing these practices, we have to standardize the mentorship. And Stu already said it, and I can't be more adamant about this. If you're a Navy mentor or an Army mentor or an Air Force mentor, it doesn't matter what it is. If you yourself cannot net pass that specific Special Operations PST, you have no business, zero business testing. And I don't give a shit how many years of service you've done, right? Because I'll stand in front of you as a former operator with my operational experience, and I'll still make the same argument. Right. I'm going to say that I expect, right. And this is why, is because when you show up at Buds, who's doing the PTs with you? All the instructors.
Yep.
They're meeting the standard. That's part of that job. Okay. So if you're a Navy mentor, an Army mentor, or whatever, and you yourself can't pass the PST, I do not believe you should have that position, first and foremost. So if we're expecting a candidate to come in and go through this process, right? If can't do teach does not work in my world as a CNO or the SECDA, right? That goes all the way up to chain of command as far as I'm concerned. It really does. So that's a big one for me. And, you know, I think that, you know, the other thing we kind of already talked about is obviously the minimum standards, you know, no weekly PSTs. Like that's not an argument when I get down. I'm just, for me, it's like that fundamentally can't and does not work in any way, shape or form. Right. For now, you could do weekly PSTs, but that doesn't mean everyone's doing them. Like you can host a PST weekly because you're getting new candidates to do the testing. That's not what we're saying.
Yeah.
We're talking in preparation for buds as a PST. And then my last bullet on the mentors is this, is they need to be qualified, right? And what does that mean, right? It can mean a couple things. We've talked about this. Like, this is one of the few times that, you know, Stu and I have taken this much notes on this because we just want to be really clear that this is not an opportunity to say, hey, I'm outside the circle. I can talk trash about whoever. That's not what this is about. This really is about offering the best possible thing that we can give these candidates, because I've said it and I'll say it again, and I'll keep saying it. They deserve the best possible opportunity if they themselves are going to put themselves in the best opportunity. Like if they're going to put the work in, we as mentors and candidates deserve it. And so what is a qualified individual, right? You have to pass the PST if you're a mentor, number one. You have to have a place of standardized testing. Right? You've got to find a place and then you got to own it, right? You're the Department of the Navy. You're the SEAL teams. You mean to tell me the SEAL teams and the Department of the Navy, which is even bigger, Army, whatever it is, can't come to an agreement with somewhere to standardize this? Some people will make the argument, well, yeah, that's what the YMCAs are for, but the YMCAs are not standardized, folks. So we can't, that argument's out the window. There's like seven YMCAs here in Hampton Roads. None of them have the same tracker pool. Right, they're different. Yeah. Okay, so for me personally, like instead of saying, because here's what we're not saying. I'm not saying that Stu and I should be in charge of this because we have this unique background as exercise physiologists and strength coaches, and former Navy SEALs. That's not what I'm saying, because we still need that Trident, that EOD, that SWIC guy, to be the gatekeeper, because they deserve that, right? And also the candidates deserve to hear from those special operators. It's your community and we want to leave it better than we found it. So the last thing is whether we're going to standardize it with a physical location or we're just going to standardize it anyway, the Department of the Navy has employed strength coaches across the board, SOCOM across the board. They're standardized, okay? So you either pull from that population to the PSTs or you just employ an additional exercise physiologist strength coach that is basically an extension of what the BUDS prep guys are at Great Lakes are, because that's what they are. Those are physiologists and strength coach and qualified individuals to prep. We need to expand that. We need to expand that umbrella out to the regions so we have a determined, clear individual from the SEAL, SWIC EOD, that's like, yep, this is my gate, and I'm going to make sure these guys work their ass off. Because that's exactly what they're there for, in my opinion. But you also need someone that's looking at from a second set of eyes going, well, that's cool, man. Like, you put the screws to them, but I'm here to make sure that the testing is standardized, whether you're a civilian or you're a former veteran, whatever it is, okay? There's got to be somebody that's qualified to do this testing. And I always say this, and this is why. And then I'll get off my soapbox for a minute. When we're talking skydiving, CQB, right, pool comp, whatever it is, right, we are teaching and testing and evaluating at the best that currently exists. And to think otherwise, it's like, well, why has CQB changed, right, since the MP5, right? It's the tactics have so much changed so much. Why? Because they needed to. Why do they need it to? To save life. But ultimately, it's because it's the right thing to do, because they're doing what's best for the community. And what is best for the community is to get somebody in there, somebody, some people to work together as a team, which is why the SEAL teams are so great. Work together as a team to get this process formalized, okay, standardized, tested, evaluated, and then each step of the way, everyone wins because they deserve it. The Navy deserves it too. And that's the thing I have a shortcoming too, is like, wait a minute. As a recruiter, a mentor, whatever it is, it's like our privilege to help these candidates. Now, the candidate has to show up. Don't get me wrong, I am not negating that. But we'll say 20% of this completion of process is that we as mentors are should be privileged to think that we can prepare and leave it better than we got it. Because of course it's better in so many regards from 2000 when I came in. Of course it's better from the 90s. And it should be. And if we said otherwise, man, what a disservice. So yeah. Leave it better. Do it better, and we can, even if we don't build it a building, you know, the standardized buildings for testing.
Yeah, I would love that. I would love the standardized buildings in every recruiting district, couple in every recruiting, because some recruiting districts are huge.
Yeah.
It would take a couple hours for some recruits to get there.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, that run by some coaches, you know, exercise physiology coaches, you know, that are DOD certified to operate all of the, you know, training that will help people prepare for all of those tests, all the new because they're all getting very in-depth. I mean, tactical fitness is evolving significantly. It's no longer push-ups, sit-ups, and a mile-and-a-half run.
Right.
It is now, you know, hanging knee-ups and deadlifts and weighted pull-ups and, you know, medicine ball throws and sled pulls and, you know, obstacle courses and body drags. I mean, why?
There's a necessary evolution.
There's a reason for it, because that's what your job's going to look like. You know, I call those old school fitness tests health and wellness tests.
Yeah.
They're basically just for you to get some anaerobic conditioning so you can live.
Right. For the exact reason it was instituted. Right. Why was a physical PTs instituted in the military? To determine someone's state of readiness.
Right.
Right. So we have to do that with respect to where they're going and they need to be. Because we know from a metric standpoint, there has to be these minimum standards. But if we know we're constantly not meeting that standard, then we know we're going to constantly fall short. So I'm of the belief too, it's like, we're not trying to exclude anyone. We're really not. But I think that's what we're lacking. We're lacking some certain ownership in certain stages. And it can be fixed.
Yep. You know what? I'm going to be devil's advocate one more time.
Please.
And I'm going to be the CNO.
Okay.
Because as the CNO, I wouldn't change anything. Because you know what I see? I see if we bring in 1,000 recruits who want to be SEALs every year and only 250 graduate, that means I have 750 sailors that I can put into jobs that I can't fill naturally.
Yep. That naturally have a higher ASVAB score too.
Right. They're typically more motivated. Right. And, you know, anyway, that's 750 people that fill slots on ships and air crews and submarines and, you know, all over the Navy. So that is why it is critical that the recruit is a better recruit.
Yep.
Because you will be used by whatever service that you join, whatever branch of service you join, to fill slots that they have a hard time filling.
Yep. Yeah. Because you're still at the needs of the Navy, and that's okay. Like, and we're not saying that to be anything other than what's reality. Do we think that it's purposeful? I don't think that that's something, but it's also from a number standpoint, it's glaringly obvious, right? Which is exactly why if you don't make it through the selection process, you don't just get to go home. There is a real commitment, and that is a real thing. So if you take it seriously, then these objective things that we're trying to plug in are important, you know? Because, and again, we're saying CNO, we're saying SecDef. Like, this is so far outside of their pay, so below their pay grade, right? But we just got to understand that, like, this isn't a blame game. That's not what it is. We're just saying, hey, who has the power to restructure this? Certainly the CNO and the SecDef does, or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But we're just trying to get a broad picture, because if we're saying, hey, Millington, Tennessee needs to get the head out of their ass. But it just, it doesn't create a solution, because that's just ignorant for me, because I'm not in the meetings. I don't know the minutia, but see, that's the beauty of it. I don't care what the minutia is from the time from the recruiter necessarily to buds, because I'm focusing on prepping guys. I've eliminated myself from it. I'm just hoping that the guys that we prep have a better opportunity of selection, and we've just seen inconsistencies, and we get the Dear Jeff, Dear Stu emails going, oh my God, like I got screwed over. And we're like, well, and it's funny because here's the thing is Stu and I typically get the same emails from the same person complaining about the same thing. We're like, wait, we've seen this guy before, and we know it's not the recruiter's fault. We know it's not the mentor's fault. But what we're just trying to do is this, is we really do care about these folks. We certainly care about the Navy and the military and the men that serve. And that's why we're doing this. This is, you know, I have a very strong personality and I know that, but like, we really are trying to make this better, and we're doing our part. But I'm glad, probably like Stu too, is I'm glad I'm not in that system trying to manage and filter through candidates, potentially knowing they're not in the right timeline.
Yeah. 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 I'm not interviewing for a job.
No, goodness. No. Yeah, no.
I mean, thank God there are people who do this job, and I'm, you know, I want you to think of me as this, and Jeff as this, is we're actually trying to help you. You know, we're trying to give you candidates that you don't have to spend 8, 10, 12 months with in the delayed entry program. And you can actually maybe spend a month, maybe 6 weeks. They're ready. They're ready to go. They don't need to languish and, you know, keep failing PSTs week after week after week. Yeah. You know, that is just unfortunate that is what many of the recruits have to do. And, you know, what a heck of a, you know, job interview that is. You know, this is probably a recruit's first time ever meeting a SEAL, SWCC, EOD, you know, mentor, and he immediately placed in the failure group on day one. I mean, that is a bad first impression.
Yeah.
But you want to go in there and crush that first PST, and people start taking you seriously. Recruiters will call you instead of you calling the recruiter and them blowing you off for months.
Yeah.
Right. They will take you very seriously along this journey. So I know, you know, if you listen to this and, you know, people share this video around, because I'm going to post it on YouTube and it'll be on iTunes and Google Play and all that. And, you know, we're not trying to beat up the system. We're trying to inform the recruit to be a better recruit, but also realize that the system isn't perfect and it can be better. It's good. It could be better. It could have some more consistencies, and we're given our opinion.
Yeah, that's all it is. Yeah,
really all it is.
Because at the end of the day, we're going to keep doing what we do prior to what the recruiter gets. That's what I mean, because obviously our stake, if you will, from a, I guess, hands-on, it ends at the recruiter most of the times. Right.
Oh,
we still might have some correspondence with them, but I'll tell you right now, when an individual gets into the delayed entry program, I really typically, I don't give or offer programming at that point, because I just say, you've kind of got what you got. You know, like once someone says, hey, I'm on a delayed entry program, this is what's going on.
Yeah. You do what the program says.
Yeah. Well, you're on your own at that point, or you're at the mercy of the system you're in then.
Yeah.
So,
and that can be a good thing for you if you're ready.
Yeah.
It can be a bad thing for you if you're constantly failing. So
once
again, our answer is it depends. It depends on a lot of variables, and that timeline can shift left. It can shift right depending on your state of readiness.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah. Yes. Hopefully that was helpful, right? Because I mean, I think that, again, the flavor is always the same. Typically, it's the ownership falls on the candidate. And as much as we want to place blame, I've not ever heard of a case, really, where someone got fully physically prepared, achieved what we're saying is like, hey, get optimal scores in your PST, be responsible, be an adult, be respectful to the recruiter in what your intentions are. You're quickly tested, handed off to a mentor. They see right away you've put the legwork in, and your timeline in DEP is very short, concise, and helpful, because the DEP program isn't just about prep. It's about understanding military knowledge and information. What's expected of you is just as a sailor, soldier, or Marine.
Yep.
Right. So there's more to the DEP program than just getting you ready for buds, because at the end of the day, the Navy doesn't care if you're a SEAL until you're a SEAL.
True.
And that's the right approach. I don't want you to misconstrue that. That is exactly the way the Navy should be. The Navy shouldn't be investing all this emotional effort and time and money into you if you have not met the selection criteria to get to training.
Yep. You got to get to the training in order to get through the training.
You bet.
And there are processes for all of that. And it, you know, once again, I hate to use my favorite answer, but it really does depend on your strengths and weaknesses, where you come into this timeline, to how long that timeline is. And, and then you just, you're ready. You know, so I had this conversation yesterday with an 18-year-old kid that I said, you know, don't join until you're ready. And he said, what do you mean ready? I said, well, do you know what the PST is? Nope. I said, well,
you're not ready,
you know, and go to sealswick.com. Read everything on sealswick.com about the process to get into it. And, you know, there's medical issues, there's, you know, ASVAB scores and CSORTs and all these little tests that you're going to have to take. And you may have to study for the ASVAB, right? Take a couple ASVAB tests. Don't take your first one with the recruiter. You know, take a practice test. Naturally be so cocky that, oh yeah, I'm good at standardized tests. Well, I'll tell you what, there are people who are good at standardized tests, but when you start seeing these little wheels that go this way and go this way, and you have to figure out what functional forces is being created, mechanical force that is being created by that, you know, it throws a curveball at you. You need to learn how these tests are taken. That same way with the PST, you need to learn how to take the test and create these strategies and systems for you that work for you along your way, so you can crush that thing.
You bet. And
beyond. So,
yeah,
I think we've kind of beat this one up a little bit. Jeff, you have any final comments?
No, that's it. I mean, cause that's the point of all this is the information exists.
Yes.
We're beyond the point of people not understanding. I mean, I think that, and that will clean up a lot of the stuff, because for someone to say, and that's okay if they come to Stu and I and say, hey, what do? We go, well, first go to the website to understand the objective administrative side of it.
Yep.
But everything, every step of the way is already in place. So if you don't get prepared, it falls on the candidate.
Yep. Be a better recruit.
Yep.
That is the title of this video. It is the theme of this video, and it is the conclusion of this video, that you need to be a better recruit. And there's a lot to learn to be a better recruit. So be patient with it. I've been posting a lot about patience lately, and you got to have patience in this system and realize your weaknesses and work on them. Otherwise, you're toast.
It's on you.
Yep. All right, Jeff. Thanks a lot. Oh, before we shut down, tell everybody what's new with Jeff Nichols.
Oh, yeah. So the building is in contract. The membership website is cranking out, and hopefully in 6-8 months, we will have an actual tactical physical training facility here in Virginia Beach. That's nice. Where it will be. It'll only, if you're not active duty, military, law enforcement, fire, a veteran, or in the pipeline of an academy, you're not, it's not, you can't train there. So you have to be in this world to come physically train there. So hopefully 8 months.
Nice. I love it.
Yep.
Membership website at performancefirstus.com.
Yep. So a lot of videos. It's primarily videos. We're going to be dumping a couple of videos on there every single week, and it's just going to continue to compile like it, my YouTube channel used to be. So I'm just trying to get as much information out there to the masses as possible, because I know that unfortunately not everyone can train with Stu and I. So that's why we do this too, is we're trying to put out as much information as we can to better inform you.
There you go. And my website, stusmithfitness.com. We'll put some of that information down below. Any of the links that we discussed in this video, I'll put them below as well. So, like I said, be a better recruit. Thank you, Jeff.
Appreciate it, Stu. Thanks.